Welcome back, everyone, to 1001 Ghost, Chiller, and Lovecraft Stories. This is your host, John Hagedorn. Get ready for two great Orson Welles episodes of The Black Museum, what he terms as London's Mausoleum of Death. And now, our show.
This is Orson Welles, speaking from London. From the Black Museum. Here in the grim stone structure on the Thames, which houses Scotland Yard, is a warehouse of homicide, where everyday objects, a picture frame, a coat hanger, a file folder, a baby buggy, all are touched by murder. Now here's a hammerhead, made of cast steel, well-shaped, extremely familiar, the front end blunt, solid, designed for driving nails, the clawed prongs at the rear for pulling nails. Very practical, very, very, very familiar. And so very, very, very lethal.
Odd one, this, wasn't it, Inspector?
Just a little extra patience, a little extra routine work, Cross.
That's one way to look at it, sir. I prefer to remember it as the case which began with almost 24 disappearances and wound up with one killer who used a hammer with purpose.
Well, today that hammerhead can be seen here in the Black Museum.
From the annals of the Criminal Investigation Department of the London Police, we bring you the dramatic stories of the crimes recorded by the objects in Scotland Yard's Gallery of Death, the Black Museum. In just a moment, you will hear The Black Museum, starring Orson Welles. Now, The Black Museum, starring Orson Welles.
Well, here we are in the Black Museum, Scotland Yard's Museum of Murder. Beyond these walls, the Thames seethes with a commerce which is life to London. Within these walls, where some of the river's dampness exudes from vaulted stone, there is quiet, very sinister quiet. A kind of silence which inevitably surrounds objects touched by horror and fear. Yes, here lies death. Behind glass doors, peaceful, inanimate objects on deal tables. The authorities have provided suitable identification in labels and neatly lettered cards. The motives, actions, and the reasons why these objects rest here now were all provided by murderers. Here's a calendar. The usual 12-page printed piece with a picture of a pretty girl to decorate it. The holidays are marked, as usual, in red. One other day is marked as well. The day and date of a murder. Strangely, that red circle led to capture and conviction, of course, to execution. Ah, here we are. Here's the hammerhead I told you about. It's an efficient tool. It's hammerhead, type used by generations of carpenters, by millions everywhere for work around the house. Hardly a home is without one. And one would expect that a story involving such a tool would begin in somebody's home. On the contrary, this tale begins in the direct antithesis to a home. It begins in a London railroad station.
Let me have my bag, will you?
Yes, sir. Your check, please.
Right you are.
Thank you, sir. Here it is, sir.
Hey, that's not my bag. Mine's a Gladstone.
I'm sorry, sir. Just let me see the checks.
Oh. What's wrong? Are you sick?
No, sir. Just my hand.
You cut yourself? That's blood.
Yes, I know. But it's not a cut, sir. It's from the bag.
Well, open it, man. Don't stand there.
Yes, sir. It doesn't seem like much of a lock on it, sir. Oh. What does one do now, sir?
When you find part of a body in a valise, you call the police, of course. What else?
Yes. Please wait, yes. I'll call.
Yes, call the police. Start the wheels moving, the wheels of police routine, which grinds slowly but inevitably toward discovery. In this particular situation, the call led eventually to the office of Inspector Church at the yard.
Here's the information, Cross. The contents of that valise at Charing Cross belong to a torso found in Brighton.
Another one in Brighton, sir?
Number 23. 23 girls missing. Just unreported.
Photos available, sir?
In most cases. Here's the assembled composite of the latest.
Pretty little thing to wind up so widely separated as London and Brighton.
Here's the setup for now. I'm assigning a man individually to each case. Identify any found bodies, trace the known missing. I'm taking Daisy Baker myself. You'll take over here, and all the information will channel through you.
Very well, sir. Why the Baker girl for yourself, sir?
Oh, she is, or was, the common law wife of Jamie Marsden.
That one!
Remember him?
Oh, picked him up in his first conviction myself. Rather a long record, hasn't he, sir?
All petty crimes, short sentences. In any case, the Baker woman's been reported missing by her sister. It might be worth a trip to see the sister. Her name is Crandall, Ruth Crandall. Before I drop in Marsden, I think I'll visit the lady.
A routine call to inquire the reasons for a woman's worry about her missing sister. Inspector Church found Ruth Crandall at home.
So, when I planned to go down to stay with Daisy, well, to see her anyway, and the wire came, well, you see how it is, Inspector.
May I see the wire, Mrs. Crandall?
Yes, I have it just here, in the desk. Yes. Yes, here it is.
I see. Going abroad. Good job. Sail Sunday. Will write. It doesn't tell us very much, does it?
Well, I tried to call. Her husband, well, he wasn't very cooperative. He said she'd upped and packed her things and told him she was bound for Paris for a dancing job.
Oh, Miss Baker is a dancer?
That's how it was. She was living in Brighton. She was in some show down there.
And you feel something is wrong?
Definitely. I don't know exactly why, but... Well, you see, the wire doesn't even say love. And that makes it seem strange too, doesn't it, Inspector?
Perhaps, Mrs. Crandall. And you've no other information, nothing you can put your finger on?
No. Except, of course, that I haven't heard from Daisy since the wire came.
The Inspector was puzzled. None of it felt right. None of it conformed at all to the usual pattern. Ruth Crandall had nothing factual to go on, and a woman's instinct is never evidence on which to base an arrest or a conviction. Still, the inspector took the train to Brighton and called on Jamie Marsden at 35 Park Row.
Yes?
You remember me, Marsden?
Copper, ain't you?
Yes, Chief Inspector Church, CID.
Well, come in, Inspector. I don't suppose this is a social visit.
No, I'm a bit busy for that sort of thing.
Oh, well, sit down anyway, Inspector.
Just a few questions.
Well, go ahead.
I hear you married since we last met.
Yes, I did. Nice girl.
She home?
Well, no, as a matter of fact, she's gone off to Paris. Her job as a dancer over there.
So her sister told me.
Yeah, well, she wired her sister. Nothing much my sister-in-law would want to see me about, so, there wasn't much sense in her coming all the way down to Brighton when Daisy wasn't here.
I assume you have your wife's address.
No, Inspector.
Oh?
We had a bit of a dust-up before Daisy left. She, flounced out of here, all kind of mad, as you might say.
Mrs. Crandall know this?
No. Mrs. Crandall don't take to the likes of me, so I saw no reason to tell anything she didn't have to know. If Daisy wants to reach her, she knows where.
Well, that's it, I suppose. You'll be here if I want to see you again, Marsden?
I'm moving. Three rooms is a bit large for me, seeing as I was on my own these days. The, new place is at Maitland Street, number 26. It's a good bit cheaper, more suited to my means.
A check of the habitual haunts and acquaintances of Daisy Baker drew another blank. Some had heard she'd gone off to Paris, no one knew where. Meanwhile, the reports on other missing girls were equally discouraging.
That's the lot, eh, Cross?
That's the lot, sir. Oh, and another missing one reported makes an even two dozen, sir.
Have they tried the picture of the girl we found in Charing Cross on this new report?
Not the same girl, sir.
Too bad.
No luck with Marsden, I presume?
No luck at all. Edgy sort of fellow, that one.
Yes, he ought to be. He's much too familiar with us, and he knows it.
Well, there's no help for it. It'll have to be a house-to-house search.
The usual district, Inspector?
All of Brighton.
Rather a large order, Inspector.
Finding 14 missing girls and identifying 6 of 10 bodies is quite an order, Cross. There's no help for it. It'll have to be done. Chances are we'll have to lend Brighton...
The hard, dull slogging of police routine. Divide a city into sections. Assign groups of detectives in pairs to each section. Then walk from house to house, from cellar to attic. Pausing for the questions, Questions, questions. Try to locate someone who has seen something, who may know one of the missing persons by sight. Try. Keep trying.
Well, there was nothing there.
It's jobs like this, Inspector, that make me wonder why I wanted to be a policeman.
It's jobs like this, Shaw, that make good policemen out of ambitious young men. Well, next address.
26 Maitland.
I expect Jamie Marsden won't be looking for me this quickly.
Marsden? Who's that?
Oh, a petty criminal. His wife was reported missing by a sister. Turned out she'd gone off to a job in Paris on her hub. Knock on the door, Shaw, will you?
Yes, sir.
Sordid kind of story. Even a touch of the dope rack in it.
Yes?
My credentials. CID. Also a search warrant.
Well, your men said certainly didn't waste any time. Please come in.
Waste any time?
Yeah, I called the police about 5 minutes ago. They said they'd send someone over.
Are you the landlord?
I am, Inspector.
Well, we're here on a matter of our own. However, what's the trouble?
Notice anything, sir?
I do. How about you, Shaw?
Yes, sir, I do.
It's from this room. The tenant is out just now. Left his door locked. Name of Marsden.
Well, is that so? Just as well we have the search warrant. Try your shoulder on that door, Shaw.
Yes, sir.
Shaw. Oh. We've never had anything like this before, sir.
There's nothing much here, unless it's on the walls.
There's a trunk in the closet, sir.
Drag it out. Cut those cords.
Yes, sir.
Good. Good Lord. May I stay outside, Inspector?
Yes, of course.
I wonder Marsden isn't home.
Well, Daisy Baker didn't go to Paris after all. Took quite a beating, didn't she? Looks like a blunt instrument did the job. Call headquarters, Shaw. Pick up order for Jamie Marsden.
Now today, that hammerhead can be seen here in the Black Museum.
In just a moment, we will continue with The Black Museum, starring Orson Welles. And now we continue with The Black Museum, starring Orson Welles.
The wires were alive with a search for Jamie Marsden. Somewhere in England, the little petty thief was hiding. And sometime he would be found. According to Chief Inspector Church,
the man almost undoubtedly killed Daisy Baker. And there's no question that he had her body in that trunk, moving it with him.
An inquiry into the whereabouts of missing girls had blossomed into a full hunt for a murderer. The premises at 26 Maitland Street, Brighton, were given a thorough going over. Detective Shaw reported,
nothing, sir. Not a trace of anything except that trunk and the body.
To which Inspector Church replied,
very well. Now give the same treatment to 35 Park Row.
There, the young detective reported,
in the backyard, sir, in a pile of junk, we found a hammerhead. It's been given to pathology, Inspector. There are stains on it. They might be blood, sir.
And, as Inspector Church said to his deputy, Inspector Cross, some 48 hours later,
pathology report, Cross. That hammerhead did the job. The stains of blood and the type conform.
Good enough, sir.
Not quite. Good enough. The handle is gone. There's no proof who used the hammer. And pathology also reports that the autopsy shows enough morphine in the Baker woman's body to establish unconsciousness before death, if not death itself.
Any record of dope handling in Marsden dossier, sir?
Nope. We haven't been able to tie him into that yet. Well, we'll see after we find the gentleman in question. Meanwhile, have them get me Brighton on the wire. I have a routine job for Detective Shaw. Too many loose ends in this one.
A call was made to Detective Shaw in Brighton. Armed with a postcard, a file number, and a hand-lettered menu, Detective Shaw invaded a certain telegraph office in Brighton.
Yes, sir. Always glad to cooperate with the police, sir.
Can you find me the original of this wire?
I think so, sir. Just a moment, please. This is it, I assume, sir. It has the same file number.
Yes, that's it. Going abroad, good job. Thank you very much. Now, if you'll just let me compare the writing on the blank with these samples I have with
me. Detective Shaw noted his comparisons and went to the telephone. A few moments later, he put a call through to Inspector Church at the yard.
Go ahead, Shaw. What have you got?
They had the original, sir.
I compared it with the postcard with the baker woman's writing on it. I'm no expert, sir, but it's obvious the two writings are absolutely different.
That's that, then.
I had a specimen of Marsden's writing, too, sir.
Where did you get that?
From a restaurant where the man worked for a while as a waiter. The menus there are handwritten. It was part of his job to write them out.
Good man.
There's no question about it, sir. Marsden wrote that wire and signed the baker woman's name to it.
Another link in the chain rapidly forging itself around Jamie Marsden. But still, no Jamie Marsden.
Every policeman in England's carrying the man's picture and description, sir.
How long is it going to take to bring the picture and the man together?
Not too long, Inspector. In fact, within 24 hours.
Here, you. Just a minute. You want me, Constable?
Stand over there, in the street light.
Very well. No weapons.
Now, why should I be carrying a weapon, Constable? I'm just an ordinary citizen.
Let's have a close look at you. Yes, I'm sure of it. You'll have to come along to the station house. You're being taken in charge.
What for?
You're Jamie Marsden, unless I miss my guess by a mile. Don't you know there's an all stations broadcast out for you? You're the most wanted man in England this minute.
That was in Manchester. Very shortly thereafter, Jamie Marsden faced Inspector Church and Deputy Inspector Cross in their office at the yard.
All right, Marsden, let's hear it. All of it.
I didn't kill her, Inspector. I didn't kill her.
But you knew she was dead.
Well, if you mean, did I put her in the trunk? I did.
But you didn't kill her.
No, sir. You've got to believe that.
Apparently you seem to understand that it's somewhat difficult to believe.
Well, that was the whole thing from the beginning.
All right. Let's go back to the beginning.
Well, me and Daisy got together down in Brighton about a year ago.
How?
Oh, she was dancing in a coot show and I was barking a booth a little way up the sidewalk. Well, sort of got into the habit of meeting her after closing time. Then, well, we reckoned that two can live as cheaply as one, so, well, we put in together and started housekeeping.
Were you pushing any of the stuff her way?
I didn't know she was on the stuff. No, not for months. Inspector, you've got to believe it.
Yes, it seems that a lot of things we've got to believe.
You heard, Cross Marsden. I'm, shall I say, sceptical, too. Keep talking.
I'm honest with you, sir, I am.
Keep talking.
Well, Daisy's sister came to visit. We didn't get along. If I'd have killed anyone, it'd have been that sister. What she came for, except to be nasty and snoop, I don't know.
Back to the story, Marsden.
Yeah, all right, sir. Well, like I was saying, we got together and everything was fine. Oh, we had a couple of fights, but, nothing much. Then Daisy said as our sister was coming down again. I got real mad. I slammed the door.
You didn't slam Daisy.
I may have cuffed her a bit, sir. Nothing serious. Anyways, I went out, and I stayed out for a couple of hours. I come back, and the place was awful quiet, and I thought, well, maybe Daisy had gone out or taken a shot or two or something. I walked into the bedroom. That was at 35, where we had the three rooms.
You walked into the bedroom and let her have it, right, Marsden?
No, sir, wrong. She had it. Oh, it was awful, Inspector. She was real bashed up, she was.
Well, why didn't you call the police?
Me? With my record? Who'd have believed I didn't do it? You don't believe me now. I never killed nobody, just been put away for small things, but I got a record. Nobody had listened, I reckon, so I got real scared. I did the first thing that entered my head.
Which was, Marsden?
I got an old trunk and I stuffed her in it, and then I took the sheets and all down to the cellar and I stuffed them in the furnace. Well, the rest you know, Inspector, and that's the truth, so help me.
What did you do with the hammer, Marsden?
Hammer? Oh, what hammer, Inspector?
The one you bashed her with, Marsden, the hammer that killed her.
I don't know about no hammer. I didn't kill her nor nobody. I didn't kill her, Inspector, and that's the truth.
They worked on Jamie Marsden for 3 days. They tried every trick, every question they could think of, but no one could shake his denial. Jamie Marsden insisted he had not killed Daisy Baker, and that was that. Weary and exhausted, Chief Inspector Church faced his deputy.
You know, Cross, I am almost beginning to believe Marsden myself.
If he did kill her, it's completely out of the pattern. His kind of criminal almost never kills.
I know, but somebody killed her. Even granting Marsden's story, somebody killed her.
Well, then, where do we go from here, sir?
Where would you doubt there were or had been other men in this woman's life?
Have you any doubt about it, sir?
Do you suppose the sister would have any ideas?
Well, it's a place to start in any case.
Check. Then let's get on with it, Cross, and ask the Brighton police to work in that angle.
The sister, Ruth Crandall, placed a start on the new angle at any rate. The two CID men paid their second visit to Mrs. Crandall.
I suppose, Inspector, you've come to ask me to testify at Marsden's trial. Nasty little man.
As a matter of fact, we haven't. We don't have enough evidence yet to send Marsden to trial. We're booked on suspicion, that's all.
Not enough evidence? Oh, hardly seems possible. The papers were full of it.
The newspapers aren't the police, ma'am.
Of course not, Mr. Cross. But after all, he did keep my sister's body with him. He did run away.
I know, Mrs. Crandall, but there's been no weapon that relates to Marsden.
No weapon? The hammer's head? Well, after all, that's a weapon.
Did you say a
hammer, ma'am? Crandall, we came here to ask you about another man in your sister's life. Have you any ideas?
I know this much, Inspector, that my sister was no better than her reputation. Heaven knows I tried. All my life I tried. When my husband died, I offered her a home, even. No, she persisted in the disgraceful kind of life she was leading. She even boasted to me once that she liked it. As for knowing the kind of men she went around with... Really, Inspector, you've seen how I live. How would I know anything about things like that?
I see. Well, Mrs. Crandall, if you think of anything which may be of help, we'll appreciate your letting us know.
Two men with a purpose left the neat suburban residence of Daisy Baker's sister. Shortly after their return to Scotland Yard, the teletypes, the telephones were all busy. Reports were swift in coming in.
Here's word from the hardware store, sir. A hammer was bought.
The janitor at 35 Park Road did see someone that day.
They found a taxi driver in Brighton who remembers.
One of the neighbors places the date exactly. Says she remembers the house was empty because a little boy was ill and she wanted to borrow something.
Here's the final touch. Local bus driver remembers the trip from out there to the railroad station.
The final touch. And once again, two men from the CID went visiting.
We've traced your movements all that day, Mrs. Crandall. Your neighbor remembers your house was shut up. The bus driver remembers how you asked if you'd reached the station on time. A taxi driver in Brighton remembers taking you to 35 Park Row. The janitor saw you there. And the hardware dealer right round the corner from here has a record of his sale of a hammer to you.
You shouldn't have mentioned that hammer, Mrs. Crandall. We never told the newspapers about finding it in the backyard at Brighton.
I was right. She wasn't fit to live. Everyone pitied me on account of my sister. They looked down on me. I never felt better in my life than when I hit her and hit her and then broke the handle off the hammer and burned it in that furnace at that awful house. If only I'd been a little more careful. Then you'd have to have tried that Marsden fellow. You'd have to have hung him.
Perhaps. Now then, Mrs. Crandall, are you ready to come quietly?
And today, that hammerhead can be seen here in the Black Museum.
Orson Welles will be back with you in just a moment. Now here, in person, is Orson Welles.
In due course, Henrietta Crandall paid the usual penalty for premeditated homicide. The purchase of the hammer was sufficient evidence of the intent to kill. As for Jamie Marsden, product of the London slums of bad company and evil ways, Jamie went free. But not for long. 6 months had barely passed before Marsden was picked up for possession of a deadly weapon and sentenced to serve 90 days for simple theft. And as for the hammerhead, well, here it is, in its usual place, in the Black Museum. So until next time, till another story about this same place, I remain, as always, obediently yours.
Orson Welles, speaking from London.
The Black Museum. Here, in a grim stone structure on the Thames, which houses Scotland Yard, there's a warehouse of homicide, where everyday objects, a simple glass, a piece of rope, a woman's handkerchief, all are touched by murder. You take this iron bar. It's a familiar object. the handle of a jack. If you own a car, you have a jack handle. Maybe you've used it, but never, never, I trust, like this. Gracie, quick, give me the jack handle.
Here, let me go. What do you want?
Today, you'll find that jack handle in the Black Museum.
From the annals of the Criminal Investigation Department of the London Police, we bring you the dramatic stories of the crimes recorded by the objects in Scotland Yard's Gallery of Death, the Black Museum.
Black Museum. A few yards from here, the Thames laps at the riverside of Scotland Yard. But you never know it in here. Not in this long, dim, stone-arched room. It's a kind of mecca. A goal to be reached by students of crime and criminology. The whole world over. Yes, here in this room lies death, and the mementos and souvenirs of death on these shelves, in these cabinets, under this well-dusted glass. The weapons, the key clues of every homicide in which Scotland Yard has taken part for almost 100 years. Now here, in this case, the small white box. It's from Edinburgh. This death was in this box. Death by poison. The death of a too importunate lover. Now, this tiny pistol, it's oiled, it's in working order. A Derringer, it's called. The killer wore it up his sleeve. And one morning at 8 o'clock, in the British tradition, the trap was sprung. The killer walked on thin air. The executioner received the customary £10. Ah, now, here's something more familiar, a jack handle. It's intriguing. Once, according to the case book, yes, that's the story. A tale which begins innocently enough when London lived in the blackout. And many American men found their after dark amusement in tiny hole in the wall cafes.
Think of me always, though we're far apart. Keep a tender memory within.
Well, look around. Small tables crowded together, not much light. Pretty stuffy, and the blackout curtains, the double blackout door don't help the ventilation much. The girl singing is pretty in a tawdry sort of way, provocative in the manner of a cheap pin-up, but the two young men in the American uniforms don't seem to mind.
How's about it, Tom? Not bad for a dive?
Not too bad. Five will get you 10, it's out of bounds.
Yeah, not yet, son. Just opened. The MPs haven't cased the joint yet.
Oh, good deal.
Well, nothing to worry about, kid.
Well, who's worried? What can they do? 6 months in the stockade, maybe? That's okay with me.
Apparently, at least one of these gentlemen is over the hill. Now, their interest has shifted, and quite naturally, of course.
You think she has to sing for a living?
It can't be much of a living.
She's not too bad. Maybe she dates.
You wouldn't know what to do about it if she does.
Says who?
Says me. What were you stateside, anyway? A parson's son or a school teacher?
I worked in a bank. So what? I got along. I did all right.
Hiding in the army?
Hiding in the... Oh, maybe. Could be.
I get it. Still water runs deep and all that stuff.
Now, look, Teddy. What you don't know won't hurt you, see?
That apply to Gracie?
Gracie? You mean the babe?
Well, who else? Grace Harwell, the London thrush, who don't sing half as good as she looks.
You know her?
Well, I met her a couple of times. You want a knockdown?
Well, why not? Now?
Well, sure. Gracie, let's see your speed, son.
You got a ringside seat.
Well, Teddy, the Yank who thought he'd take Soho single-handed.
Sit down, Gracie. What'll you have?
My regular. Who's your friend?
Oh, meet Private Tom Bennett, Gracie Harwell.
Hi.
Hello, soldier.
Let me get your drink, Gracie. Faster that way.
Hey, what about your ringside seat?
I'll be back in time. That fast, you can't work. Grace?
Yeah?
How would you like to help me win a bet?
Well, this is a new approach.
Good. Now, look, all I need to win is a date with you, see, for tomorrow night. Well, how about it? After the show?
You want furlough?
Maybe. Maybe not. I'll be in town tomorrow night.
Got a car with petrol?
No, but I will have.
You say that like you meant it.
I will have a car and gas. When and where?
Well, I'm not saying for sure, but be outside at 1 o'clock in the morning. You may win your bet.
So, they met. That was the beginning. Next morning, Tom was at the appointed place, complete with Jeep and fuel.
Hi, Gracie.
Hello, soldier.
Come on, climb aboard.
Where'd you get it?
Let's say I borrowed it. Shall we go?
Why not?
A boy, a girl, a Jeep. In the London blackout without benefit of cherry planes and bombs. A time to relax, to make an impression on the girl. The former bank clerk made his play to the girl who sang club dates on the seamy side of London.
It's too bad. No moon tonight.
The moon means bombers.
At this point, that's not too bad.
Well, that's silly.
Oh, look, bombers mean there's a war on. No war, I wouldn't be here.
Well, what's good about that, being here?
I could itemize. One, I met you. Let's leave it at that.
You start early.
That's the States. Don't waste time.
You didn't waste time borrowing the Jeep.
What's one Jeep, more or less? I worked in the carpool. I know my way around.
You must. You went back to get the car.
What are you getting at, sister?
The car. It's out without a pass. So are you.
Smart girl.
I know my way around. Want to sell the Jeep? I know a fellow will give you a good price.
No, I need it.
What for?
Business.
What kind of... Look out! That bike!
Gee, thanks.
Oh.
That's no place for a bike this time of night. Nor the girl on it.
What kind of business?
I have a small problem. Being out without a pass, I don't get paid.
Oh.
Money's necessary even in wartime. I had my ways back in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
Los Angeles to you. But I need a car. You get it, Gracie? Now, if you'd like a small demonstration, we can begin.
You know, a man boasts to a girl and decides to make good the boast. This very modern variation on that theme consisted of stopping the Jeep at the side of the road, cutting the engine, waiting. Half amused, half interested, the girl sat quietly as the soldier climbed out of the car and stationed himself in the shadows. Along the road came the bicycle, the girl on it pedaling swiftly, her thoughts 1,000 miles away. She drew alongside the parked, half-hidden Jeep.
Okay, sister, I'll take that bike.
Hey, what's the idea? I've got to get home.
I want that bike, you hear?
Oh, I won't give it.
Shut up. You want one across the mouth?
Oh, no. You leave me alone. You leave me alone. You leave me alone.
How was that, Gracie? And she left her bag. There ought to be enough left in it for a couple of beers.
So that's the way you do it in L.A.?
Yeah.
You're all right, Tommy. Only next time, let's crack it for more than the price of a couple of beers.
Next time was the next evening, but early, before the bars closed. Gracie, the pin-up, said...
I won't go to work tomorrow night, and I know a spot off by itself. With a Jeep, we can get away fast, like you did it in L.A.
And they drove up to the spot, a small pub on a side road, and Gracie said...
Let's get to it, Tommy. They've got customers. That means money in the till.
But Tommy hesitated, and he said...
Too many.
Scared?
Oh, why take chances? There might even be a cop in there. Maybe later.
You promised. You said I'd be the lookout while you went in and collected.
Maybe later, not now.
Well, let's do something, Tom.
We'll find something. You want a thrill? We'll find something.
They drove away. A well-lighted, well-populated pub was not to Tom's liking. He preferred the dark roads, the byways, the lone victims. But Gracie wanted her thrill. Tom found it for her.
Hop in, miss.
Oh, is it really awfully nice of you?
But, Tom...
Oh, you wanted a thrill, baby. Well, you'll get it. Where are you headed, miss?
Well, out to Kingston, if it's on your way.
Yeah, it's on our way. You all set? Let's go.
Two girls and a boy racing along the unlighted road toward Kingston. Not much conversation. There never is with a hitchhiker in the car. Tom drove, Gracie waited. River flowed close to the highway, black glass, silent in the starlight.
What's wrong?
I think I have a flat.
Oh, I didn't hear
him. I said I think I have a flat.
Oh, yes, it does feel off a bit. The Jeep, I mean.
Felt like the left rear.
Can I help?
What if you'd get out, miss? You can leave your suitcase. The tools are under your seat.
Of course.
What can I do?
I'll need the jack. The handle is on the floor, Gracie.
Yeah, I've got it.
You, miss. I want your handbag.
What? Oh, no. No, you keep away from me.
Give me that back.
Oh, help, somebody. Help. Oh, no, get away from me. Get away. Pick up my dress.
Go on, Tubby. Grab her. Drop her up.
No, I won't. I won't. I...
Gracie, quick, give me the jack handle.
Here.
Let me go. What do you want?
Fight back, will you?
Hit her again, Tommy. Hit her.
What for? She's done. We got her stuff.
I think she's breathing.
So what? Give me a hand.
What'll we do with her?
Into the river. What do you suppose I picked this place for? Get her feet.
Stop them.
Now, into the drink she goes.
Oh, Tom. Tom.
Well, did you get a thrill out of that, baby? That's the way we do it in L.A. Knock them over and dump them someplace where they won't be found. Okay, let's get going, Gracie. We got places to go and things to do tonight.
Nice, clean fun. The end of that night's work was a jack handle. A jack handle. It lies today in the Black Museum.
In just a moment, we will continue with The Black Museum, starring Orson Welles. Continue with The Black Museum, starring Orson Welles.
It was to be some time before the jack handle came to rest in the Black Museum. A trail of blood and misadventure was yet to be blazed through wartime London. Tom and Grace were amateurs at crime like this, but they knew enough to cover their tracks. They ditched the Jeep, parking it in a rub street. They took cover during daylight. But night and the blackout were their cloak as they prowled for further victims.
I'm sick of walking.
Does my lady want her limousine?
I want a ride. Do you hear, Tommy boy?
I hear. Come on, we'll duck into this vestibule. Something will be along. Give me a kiss.
Oh, you never have enough.
Haven't kissed a babe in a doorway since L.A. Good.
What's that in your pocket?
This? You like it? Shell in the chamber, full clip.
Where'd you get it?
Army stores, Natch. Pretty?
Throw it away.
Are you kidding?
Do you know what they give you for carrying a pistol in this country?
Well, what's the difference? We killed that dame, didn't we? They take us, it's the chair anyway.
Well, over here, it's the rope. At 8 o'clock in the morning. I'm cold, Tommy. I'm cold.
You cold? Maybe you're the warmest thing in London. What's that, a car?
Must be.
Come on.
Throw the pistol away.
You want a ride, don't you? Hey, driver, give us a lift.
He's stopping for us.
Obliging fellow, isn't he? Where to, Yank? Your way, toward Shepherd's Bush. My girl's got kind of tired of walking.
This is awfully nice of you.
Well, a taxi, you know. Private car with hack license. I'll have to charge you for the ride.
Well, we don't mind, do we, honey? We got plenty of money. Hop in the back.
Private car with hack license. Driver, James Carter. Direction east through the blackout. The blue, shaded headlights barely glowing in the gloom. After a little distance,
Driver, we changed our minds. How much would it cost me to go a little way further? Out as far as Shepherd's Bush.
Driver Carter obliged. It was his job. Pick up passengers, deliver them through the blackout wherever they wanted to go for a price. A living of sorts. Driver Carter thought of it as a living.
It's plenty deserted out here.
The Jerrys did a thorough job out this way.
It's near the docks, isn't it?
I suppose so.
It's a good place.
Perfect. You think he's got any money?
All right, driver, stop here.
Yes, sir. Nothing here but the rubble.
You heard me. Stop. You know what this is?
Service pistol.
You hold it, Gracie.
Got it.
Now don't move, driver. She's got an itchy finger.
You can have my wallet.
Keep him covered, Gracie, while I open the front door. Give me back the gun.
Hurry, Tom.
All right, you, driver, get out. On this side.
You can have a car, too. Just leave me alone.
Gracie, did you ever see the hole a 45 makes in a man?
No, Tommy. Never.
Now, don't!
Big enough to put your fist through in the back where it came out. Let's toss him in the rubble. That'll do it. Now we can ride anywhere you want to go.
It doesn't take much to kill a man. You pull the trigger. The firing pin strikes the cartridge. The powder explodes. And then the bit of lead tears into the man. That's all. Nothing left but a few chemicals, which once were living flesh. A few rags of clothing. Toss it into the rubble. Dust to dust. Dawn. Dawn comes to the warring city. The sun touches the rubble. The sun moves warmly over the cold rubble, over the dead. The night watchers start home. The fire wardens, weary but relieved after a quiet night, take a shortcut toward their breakfasts. A few hours' sleep.
Margie. Hey, what's that?
Body, seems like.
This area was cleared out months ago.
He's fresh, that one. Let's have a look, shall we?
They had their look. It wasn't pleasant.
Shot through the chest.
Stay here. I'll find a call box.
The fire warden placed his call. He rang straight through to Scotland Yard. A short while later, a man picked up the telephone on his desk inside the Greystone building on the Thames.
Inspector Mason here.
Sergeant Davis, sir.
Go ahead, Sergeant.
A body found in the East End, sir. Shot to death. Large caliber from the size of the wound. Probably a service pistol.
Uh-huh. Identified as yet?
The identity papers are still on him, sir. James Carter, taxi driver. Private car registration, tag number RD7445.
The car?
No sign of it, sir. Tire marks in the road. It's a thoroughly bombed area, sir. Very little traffic.
Another one. Very well. Send out the usual teletype. Description of the car, you know, check for relations, friends of the deceased. Well, that's all we can do for now.
Routine. The teletype to all police stations. The constables memorize the details while they go on patrol. London is a big, sprawling city. The blackout isn't any help. That's all for now. But the wheels have begun to turn. Routine, inexorable, never-ending. And so... another telephone call.
Constable Gray, Inspector.
Yes?
Ladbroke Station. I believe I have the car that was posted this morning.
Uh-huh.
RD7445. Black sedan. It's parked in Bush Mews.
Yeah?
That's a dead end, sir. It's facing out.
Oh, very good, Gray. Stand by. We'll be along shortly.
A sharp-eyed constable on the blackout. The park car. Routine. Inexorable. Inevitable.
Cut your engine, Sergeant. This'll do it.
Yes, sir.
Usual routine. If there's an attempt to drive out, turn on your headlights. The driver will be blinded.
Very good, sir.
Gray. Constable Gray.
Yes, sir.
Inspector Mason, CID. Anything yet?
No, sir, not yet. There's a pinhole in the blackout curtain, second story window of the house behind the car. There was a light up there.
Mm-hmm. Nothing now.
It went out a moment ago, sir.
Right, take post behind the car, Gray. Accost anyone who approaches it. The area's covered. There'll be no escape.
Yes, sir.
The constable's footsteps fade and stop. Silence. Darkness. The trap is set. They wait. No movement, no sound. Not even the glow of a cigarette. Just darker shadows in the darkness. In the depths of the little mews, a door opens and closes. Footsteps briefly. Two pairs of footsteps. A car door opens. Then Constable Gray calls out,
"Don't start the engine there. You're under arrest.
Sergeant, your lights.
Tommy, the coppers.
They got us boxed.
Gray.
You won't take me.
Hold him, Gray.
Got him, sir. You got nothing on me.
Never mind that. It's my duty to inform you that you're under arrest. You'll be charged with murder. And I warn you that anything you say will be taken down in writing and may be used in evidence.
You can't prove anything.
Run the rule on him, Constable.
Yes, sir. This, sir. Service pistol.
Oh, good enough. Take them along.
All right, you two.
Don't touch me. I'll go along. He made me go with him. He threatened me with a pistol. He made me go along.
That was her cry. All through the trial which followed swiftly. That was the plea of the tawdry little pin-up from the seamy side of London.
He made me do it. He hit me, showed me his pistol. He made me do it.
What are the robberies, the cheap, shilling-sized robberies?
Yes, I took that girl's purse. I went through the driver's wallet before we left his body, but he made me do it. You've got to believe me. He made me do it.
There were other far less hysterical witnesses, men who spoke with a calm certainty of truth. There was the ballistics expert.
There is absolutely no doubt. The bullet which killed James Carter, the driver of that hired car, was found in the flooring of the car. We have compared it with test bullets fired from the pistol found on the accused. The rifling marks are identical. The death bullet was fired from that pistol.
Tom Bennett, accused of murder, wanted for desertion by the United States Army, former bank clerk. He played his role defiantly.
I tell you, she's framing me. This whole deal was her idea. You should have seen the bank she got when she watched what was going on. Now she's trying to pass the buck to me.
And with customary thoroughness, Scotland Yard turned up a surprise witness.
Yes, those are the two. She gave him the jack handle and he hit me with it. They threw me in the river. The lorry driver found me. I know them anywhere.
He made me go along. He made me. I'll prove it. I'll show you where we left the Jeep. The jack handle's still in it.
Gentlemen of the jury, have you reached a verdict?
We have, my lord.
Let the prisoners face the jury. What is your verdict?
We find both defendants guilty of murder and add a recommendation of mercy for the female prisoner.
Oh, yes, juries behave somewhat strangely at times. This one was impressed with a plea of compulsion, but not quite enough, it seems, to acquit Grace Harwell. Thus, it came about in due course that the judge pronounced the sentence.
Thomas Bennett, you have been found guilty of murder. The sentence of the court is that you be hanged by the neck until you are dead. And then may the Lord have mercy on your soul.
On Grace Harwell, the judge pronounced the same terrible sentence. But the jury's recommendation for mercy led the Home Secretary to commute this to penal servitude for life. A lifetime for Grace Harwell to remember.
He made me go along. He made me go along.
Jack handle. It lies today in the Black Museum. So much for the story of Grace and Tom. Tom's life ended on the scaffold. The life of Grace Harwell continues in the drab monotony of Holloway Prison. The service pistol, of course, and the jack handle remain in their places, their special places of honor, on a shelf in that curious room which is known in Scotland Yard as the Black Museum. And now, until next time, till we meet again in the same place, and I tell you another story of the Black Museum, I remain, as always, obediently yours.
We hope you enjoyed these two episodes of The Black Museum with Orson Welles. If you did, please send us a review and share with friends. And you Spotify listeners, we appreciate comments as well. This is your host and storyteller, John Hagedorn. This is 1001 Ghost, Chiller, and Lovecraft Stories. Until next time, everyone, stay safe, and we'll be back soon.